everybody is missing something in life.
I felt prisoner to my own success.
Change is hard. Change is hard. I get it. Change or die.
I'm gonna change things.
So what the hell can we change? If we can see things differently, we can have some different results.
Only on Now Media Television Networks.
Welcome to Be the Giraffe. I'm your host and guide, Chris Jarvis. If you are looking for ways to stand out and reach higher in business, with money, and in life, then you are in the right place. On Be the Giraffe, we meet the innovators who dare to be different and stick their necks out. We learn how they broke free from the herd and used their long necks to discover better paths. Today, we have an adventure of a show. My guest is Sean Swarner. Sean is the first cancer survivor in history to complete the seven summits. That's the highest mountain on each continent. And go on to achieve the extremely rare Explorer's Grand Slam, skiing to both the North and South Poles. He later pushed human limits even further by completing the World Marathon Challenge. That's seven marathons in 7 days on seven different continents. After years of chasing man's seemingly unreachable goals and conquering those false summits, Sean realized that fulfillment doesn't come from breaking records, but from living with purpose. Get ready to elevate your perspective, pursue your dreams boldly, and focus on the one true summit in life. Sean Swarner, welcome to Be the Giraffe.
I appreciate it, man. You know, every time I hear the Explorer's Grand Slam, I think in my mind, it sounds like a Denny's breakfast platter.
It could be.
You know, I didn't name it, but I was like, come on, like I'm gonna reach the North Pole and have a side of eggs and bacon and hash browns waiting for me. But no, we were chased by polar bears instead.
Now, you did all these things, and I'm so grateful you're here. The audience doesn't know this. You came here directly from?
Oh, man, I haven't been home in about 2 months. Came here from my 27th trip up Kilimanjaro, flew to Puerto Rico, hung out with my wife's family. She's born and raised in Puerto Rico. And then I had a couple keynote talks in Ohio, went to Cedar Point. Have you ever heard of Cedar Point?
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to Cedar Point. We had to do that. And then we flew here. And now, tomorrow, we're finally flying home.
Okay,
so But it's a pleasant surprise, and it's very nice to be here. So all those places, this is the best.
Where? I doubt that, but I appreciate the kindness. So this is the kind of stuff. I met Sean at an event where it was called Mission Driven, where I actually met Richard Branson. But the most impactful part of that meeting was meeting you. They were showing your movie, the documentary True North, which was about you getting to finishing the Explorer's Grand Slam by skiing to the North Pole.
Right.
And tell us a little bit about that, because I have some stories about watching it, but tell us about the final piece. And well, before we get into that, the movie starts with your story. And so I just went over it very briefly. You're not this great explorer, adventurer, athlete.
No.
Because your parents had you in select soccer and they worked really hard. You had a very different childhood. So for the people in the audience who have challenges or think they have challenges, please share a little bit of that.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, everybody has their own perspective in life, and it comes from how we're raised. It comes from our past, right, and our experiences. Imagine being in the hospital when you're 13 years old, right on the cusp of your life. You got your whole life ahead of you. And all of a sudden, now you're given an expiration date of 3 months. So for me, that's exactly what happened. And we'll get into the second one. I was also given an expiration date of 14 days. But I was diagnosed with advanced stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. And they told my parents, hey, your firstborn son is not expected to live more than 3 months. So that hit the family in such a tremendously hard way. You know, I don't even know how my parents did it. Looking back, I think it was more difficult on them. But there was a moment that I remember, like it was yesterday, so vividly. I remember waking up 3 months into the treatment, you know, the same amount of time I was given to live. I remember sitting on my bed, and something caught my eye off to my left side, where my pillow was, where my head was laying that night. It was just covered in hair. And I remember running to the bathroom and looking in the mirror, and like, I don't even recognize who's looking back at me. because I was 60 pounds overweight, bald from head to toe. I looked like an ogre because I was just, in my eyes, I had nothing left of who I was before. I was a runner. I did do soccer, but it was YMCA soccer. Pole vaulter, cross country, swimmer, you know, I was in everything. But now I'm 60, 70 pounds overweight, and I couldn't even recognize myself. Cool story about the whole hair on the pillow thing is, when I was in the shower, all my hair fell out because of the chemo. But the days and months leading up to when that actually happened, when I was in the shower, my mom would come in and she would replace the pillowcase. Pretty cool, best mom ever. So I remember being in the shower and the water's hitting my hair and kind of soaking down into my hair and hitting my scalp. And eventually it was just hitting my scalp and I collapsed to my hands and knees on the shower floor. Chunks of hair were filling the drain. Water couldn't go down, so the water was rising up in the shower. I was on my hands and knees just sobbing, no hope, no nothing. And I started thinking about what my friends were doing when they were getting ready for school that same day. And when you're in the eighth grade, freshman year in high school, I mean, what are your biggest concerns? You know, where are you gonna sit at lunch? You know, who you're gonna might be going out on a date with, you know, being popular? Now flash back to that young man who's on his hands and knees with no hope. Like, I wasn't concerned about being popular, I was worried about living. But I realized that I didn't wanna focus on not dying, I wanted to focus on living. So it was that shift in perspective that really changed everything. And also, kind of fast forwarding to when I was diagnosed the second time, completely unrelated. No one's ever had Hodgkin's lymphoma and Askin's sarcoma. This time around, I had a 0.0000000001% chance of living.
That's like the lottery.
That's why I won the life lottery. That's right. Why I look at it. But the doctors told my parents, your son now has 14 days to live.
And you were how old?
At this time, I'm almost 16 years old. And I think what really helped was the fact that when I was diagnosed the first time, my parents never said, hey, Sean, you have cancer. They never used that word. They said, hey, Sean, you're sick. And we're going to get you better. And because I implicitly trusted my parents, I believed what they told me to be true. So I wasn't fighting for my life. In my mind, I was just sick and I was gonna get better. And I took that mindset into the second cancer. I didn't know I had 14 days to live, but I knew I had cancer the second time, which I didn't wanna go through it again. You know, I was gonna lose my friends, I was gonna lose my hair, I was gonna lose my life. But I took that mindset that my parents instilled in me, that they empowered me with the idea and concept of, I'm not battling for my life, I'm just sick and everything's gonna be okay, depending on my own perspective and beliefs.
So when they only gave you a couple weeks to live, they must have given you some extreme amount of treatment or something. There must have been something involved. I assume that was a rough go.
The second one was really rough. In fact, it was the treatments were so intense. I would go in for a cycle of treatment, which would be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then I'd be released from the hospital, so my counts would go higher, and then I'd go back in Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And that was one cycle. And every time I was inpatient in the hospital, the treatments were so harsh, the doctors put me in a medically induced coma. I don't remember being 16 years old, except for the 1 month of radiation therapy that I had that destroyed my right lung. So I only have one functioning lung. So every time you breathe, I have to breathe twice to make up for that.
So they gave you the treatment, and then I assume that the rehab after that took quite a while. When you were done, I assume you were in pretty rough shape.
I was, but a year after I was placed in remission, I actually won my high school's league track meet in the 800 meter run. It's amazing what the body can do if you have the right mindset. The mind fails before the body does.
So go with that. So you get out of the hospital, or when you had that treatment, you changed your mindset. What did you lean on? What is your true north? We'll get to that a little later. But what was that guiding light for you?
Initially, in a roundabout way, we'll get to that. Initially, I just wanted to forget I even had cancer. When I was going through the treatments, all I wanted to do was be normal. You know, look at the impressionable years that I had cancer. And my whole focus was I was probably the only kid who wanted to be in school at the time. Like, I was tired of going to the hospital. Like, I want to go back to school. I want to be normal. That's it. So when I was placed back in remission, I didn't even think about the cancer. In fact, have you heard of the American Cancer Society does a Relay for Life? Right? And they have the luminaries out there, and the survivors walk that first lap, right, as a tribute and an honor. My mom volunteered for them. She put together two of those things. I didn't walk the first lap. It hit me too hard. It was like, I don't want cancer to define me. So I eventually went to college. I turned into, have you ever seen the movie Animal House?
Yes.
Yeah, I was a Belushi in Animal House. So I was kind of swinging from the rafters, having a great time. In grad school is when I was studying to be a psychologist for cancer patients, when I realized everything that I went through gave me the tools to help somebody else, but how am I gonna help someone else if I don't help myself first?
I wanna get to that in the next segment. So if you want to change your mindset, look at things differently, and overcome the most amazing obstacles, come back at the next segment so you can be the giraffe with Sean Swarner. Hey, Chris Jarvis, this week on Be the Giraffe, my guest, Sean Swarner, the author of Being Unstoppable. He has done the seven summits and the North Pole and South Pole and has run seven marathons in 7 days on seven different continents. This man is unstoppable. Oh, by the way, he's a two-time cancer survivor and only has one lung. Despite that, he is going to breathe life into your goals, into your life. You do not want to miss it. This week on Be the Giraffe, Sean Swarner. Welcome back. My guest today is Sean Swarner, who has done the Explorer's Grand Slam. That's all seven summits in the North Pole and the South Pole. You'd think he's Santa Claus, but not so much. Welcome back.
Appreciate that. I need to grow a much bigger beard and put on about 100 pounds.
Well, you did that before. Let's not do that again. So in the first segment, you talked about having cancer twice, given no chance to live, really impossible odds. You beat that. And then immediately, and I shouldn't say immediately, but you got to college, grad school, and you decided that you were going to take this thing that nearly killed you and you were going to try to turn it around and use it to help other people. So tell me about that.
Well, interesting how that transition happened, because for the longest time, I was terrified. I would go in once a year for a checkup. And I remember a couple times I had some scares. You know, even now I still go in once a year for checkup because no one's ever had these two cancers. The doctors have no idea what's gonna happen. So every time they draw my blood, I get the results. I'm like, sweet, I got another year to live. So I really make the most out of it. But for the longest time, it wasn't like that. And I was terrified. Anxiety is real. Until I realized I was allowing a six-letter word to control my emotions and feelings. And who's in charge of how you feel? You are. But I'm allowing something else, something out here, to affect me on the inside. So I went to the bathroom and I looked at myself in the mirror and I literally said the word cancer out loud probably 30 or 40 times. Just cancer, cancer, cancer. When I got to 30 times, I started laughing. Like, what the hell am I afraid of? So when I finally got that out, I realized that everybody in the world needs hope. You know, the human body can live for about 30 days without water. The human condition can sustain itself for about 3 days, the human condition can sustain itself for about 30 days without food. It can survive for about 3 days without water, but no human alive can live for more than 30 seconds without hope. And I wanted to give that hope to other people. And I figured by utilizing and reaching the tallest platform in the world, some people might get some inspiration from that, which is Mount Everest. And I climbed Everest with one lung, but every step along the way, it had a deeper impact because I was doing something people thought was physiologically impossible. But every step, I had two things. I had a mantra. One was, the higher I go, the stronger I get. The higher I go, the stronger I get. Going back to what I learned when I was in the shower, focusing on what I wanted, not the avoidance of what I didn't want to happen. Higher I go, the stronger I get. And the second one was, every step along the way, I had a flag that was about this big that had names of people touched by cancer. And it was, it was folded up in my chest pocket, and it was close to my heart. So every step, that was a reminder of why I was there. And when I made it to the summit, I realized that I didn't get those people to the top. They pulled me. And that's when it really hit me. And then I realized that there were six other peaks, six other continents wanted to do that. And then going back to the Explorer's Grand Slam, which again, I still, every time it's a Denny's breakfast platter in my head. South Pole, North Pole, we were tracked by two polar bears going to the North Pole. But when I reached the North Pole again, we had a flag that was probably 6 feet by 4 feet, thousands and thousands and thousands of names. And to me, they're people, not just names. You know, people who've passed away, unfortunately, it happens. People who are battling for their lives, people who are survivors. And again, just like Everest, this time they were pushing me the whole way. And then you'll have to watch the movie to see how it ends. Like the Titanic, you know, it sinks, I make it to the North Pole. I'm back, everything's okay. But there's a lot that I learned about what I've been through and how you can utilize that trauma to be your strength.
And we met when they were showing that film at Mission Driven, and I was standing in the back, and you happened to get up and walk toward the back. That's when we started chatting. Where can people see the movie? So True North, that's the story of you completing the Grand Slam, and you show the names and the flag, and it's a real, where can people see it? Tell everybody where they can actually find this movie.
If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it on Amazon Prime. True North is Sean Swinner's story, but I don't get any royalties, so if you don't have Amazon Prime, don't pay for it. There's a free version on YouTube.
On YouTube, there it is. So True North, it's the documentary that you get there, and you do have this giant flag, and it showed, what I found fascinating in that was, while you're training to go to the North Pole, which is not easy, right?
Not at all.
Pretty cold place. And
80 below.
80 below zero. And you're dragging lots of gear.
200-pound sled.
200-pound sled through 80 below. So showing the training, but while you interspersed with this training, you're going to hospitals, you're going to meet people, you're going and getting signatures of names and inspiring people. And like, this isn't just an ego thing for you.
I have never made it to the summit of any significant peak by myself. Everest, Elbrus, Aconcagua, you know, the highest mountain on every continent. But that also includes going through the cancers. In business, in life, you can't do it alone. You know, and hypothetically, let's say I climbed Everest all by myself. Yay, self high five. Like, I want to celebrate it with people. You know, and when you have that group, you have a deeper purpose behind it. So that's what it was all about. It was never about an ego-driven bucket list checkmark thing. It was about giving hope to other people. And it's very similar to when I do visit the hospitals. Like, I'm visiting a hospital, say, a few days ago. There's a young man who's laying in the hospital bed, battling for his life, and he sees someone who's been in that situation. I'm assuming that he probably gets something out of it. I also get something out of it too. But in my mind, if something happens on the mountains or on these expeditions, I can always pick up the satellite phone, insurance kicks in, like, hey, you know, get me out of here. I'm not feeling it today, and I'll come back next year. Helicopter comes in, takes me out. Someone's fighting for their lives, battling cancer, they can't pick up their cell phone, like, yeah, you know, I'm not feeling it today. They have to keep going. So I think we're inspiring each other. It's like kind of this circle of hope.
I think what's an important thing for goals, having something to inspire you that drives you that's bigger than you is really important. But there's also the obligation to give back. You know, that connection to the people who helped you, whether it was your parents, who were super impressive in the documentary.
Absolutely.
I think the first thing I said to you, they were interviewing your mother, and I think what I said to you was, I see where you get it from.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or she's formidable.
Yeah.
You could see the strength in her. But it's not just this joy and celebration and appreciation for where you are, but an obligation, a responsibility to give back and inspire others. And that seems real deep with you.
Absolutely. I mean, my mom now, she's a breast cancer survivor. Her name was on the flag as well. You know, and if you have that, again, going back to purpose and values, if you're going through life and you don't have a set of values for your own personal life, how are you going to succeed in business? How are you going to succeed in your marriage? How are you going to succeed in sports if you don't know what you value yourself? Because how you grow as a person affects everything in your life. Every relationship, and it can be relationships, meaning anyone from your significant other to the person who's bagging your groceries. You have a relationship with that person. It all comes down to how you treat someone else in that relationship. So if you don't have a set of personal core values, how are you going to decide which way you're going to go in life? How are you going to decide which path to choose? So for me, personal growth, charity, giving back, and those were instilled years ago. And I still hold on to those to help and give back because I want to make the world a better place. We all know that if you look at the news, turn on the TV, I don't care if you watch Fox, I don't care if you watch CNN, I don't care if you watch anything, if you read anything on the internet, you know, 99% of it's negative. You know, 0.00001% is positive. I want to be the change in the world that makes a difference in someone else's life.
And you're doing that. It's you did something really interesting the day before you summited Kilimanjaro. You sent me a note, and truly, the day before you summit, so you're already at altitude. Maybe you were a little hypoxic,
a little weird.
You're a little weird at that point with the lack of oxygen. But you actually sent me a message from the mountain, said you were about to summit, and asked me if I wanted to add any names to the flag. And then it was my mother, my father, my father-in-law. There was Jim Monroe, who's coming on the show. There was Tia Manzoni, who's someone I've worked with. There was Matt Criglio, a friend of mine who died. There was Gene Chandler, my mother-in-law. I mean, there was just a whole bunch of people, and you put all of them on there and then sent a picture. So we'll put a picture up on the screen and show people the flag. But you did this, put their names up, asked me for their names, told me they were on there, and then planted that flag in Kilimanjaro, and then also sent me a picture. So it wasn't like, yeah, I'll do it, but how would he know?
Because right.
Then I have to follow you up there to see it. But it's
what are you doing in July next year? You want to go check it out?
I knew that was coming. So this was I'm going to get outed in segment four. So you're doing the things, and I greatly appreciate that. This comes at a cost. I mean, you shared with me like the cost of the beauty of having goals and doing extraordinary things. You need people to push you. You need help. You can't do it alone. But sometimes there's a chasing and a climbing that has some pain and has a little bit of can kind of hold you back a little bit, or sometimes you'll have that slingshot effect where you pull something one way and then it comes back the other. And so I know you shared that. So after the break, I want you to help everybody understand that not only can you do great things, but you've got to look at and take care of yourself, because sometimes these things can take a toll on you, and there's some balance between doing a lot of good and not losing yourself on the way.
Absolutely.
So be ready to come back for the real deep stuff with Sean Swarner. We'll be here. Hey, Chris Jarvis, this week on Be the Giraffe, my guest, Sean Swarner, the author of Being Unstoppable. He has done the Seven Summits and the North Pole and South Pole and has run seven marathons in 7 days on seven different continents. This man is unstoppable. Oh, by the way, he's a two-time cancer survivor and only has one lung. Despite that, he is going to breathe life into your goals, into your life. You do not want to miss it. This week on Be the Giraffe, Sean Swarner. Welcome back. I am here with Sean Swarner, who has done the Seven Summits, the Explorer's Grand Slam, meaning he's done North Pole, South Pole. He's also done the World Marathon Challenge and done seven marathons on seven continents in 7 days. And by the way, he's a two-time cancer survivor who was given so much treatment, he lost a lung. So he's done all of that with one lung. Yes, one lung. So you breathed a lot of life into us, despite the fact that you only have one lung, in the first two segments and talked about how to get through adversity and how to push through to get to achieve big things by having a purpose, a goal bigger than yourself. But you shared with me that sometimes you do these things and you push and you push and you push and you have this great purpose, but sometimes the result isn't always what you expect.
You know, it's interesting, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm a huge believer in vivid visualization. You know, it works. When I was training for Everest, I visualized myself on the summit. You know, and I visualized myself thousands of times, taking the last few steps, hearing the styrofoam sound of the snow crunching under my feet, smelling the ozone, feeling the sun's radiation on my face. Did the same thing when I was battling my cancers. I actually was inside my body destroying the cancer cells. And I visualized myself swimming the 50-meter breaststroke. Going for the North Pole, I visualized myself reaching the North Pole, completing the Explorer's Grand Slam, again, thousands of times. I knew exactly what it was gonna look like. What I didn't picture and what I didn't expect was when I reached the pole, you know, I was elated. I mean, actually, I proposed to my wife, my now wife at the North Pole too.
We're going to get to that story because it's hysterical.
Okay. Reached the North Pole, and I was elated. You know, the helicopter took me back, but I was so focused on the goal, so focused on the destination, looking back at the seven summits, even Everest to a point, and the trip to the North Pole, South Pole. I was so focused on the goal, the end result, that when I got there and I came home, the first thought I had was, now what do I do? What's next? And because I was chasing certain things without enjoying the journey, I fell into a depression. You know, for a month or so, I was lost. I wasn't myself. I was just constantly looking for something else to fulfill what void I had in me because I didn't have another goal. And it hurt. You know, it really hurt. And then I realized that I had to start focusing on the journey. I had to start focusing on enjoying the process. Because if you're not enjoying the process, what's the point? You reach a goal, you're gonna try to find another goal. And I realized that I was constantly chasing these false summits as opposed to the real summit. Like, why do I want that? You know, say my goal is to buy this awesome mug, right? And I get it. Well, why do I want it? Is it because it represents personal growth? Is it because it represents success? And I had always been chasing the thing, the shiny object syndrome. And every time I got it, not anymore, I realized it was a false summit. It never gave me that hope. That hope and that joy and that happiness, that's an inside job.
So this is a big, well, in fairness, you were 13 and you were fighting for your life. You did have a goal that was kind of important.
Well, yeah.
If you don't reach that one, there are no more. Like, that, right. There is one summit. But I think about the visualization. My dad was a professional baseball player, and I can remember somebody asking him if he was nervous, or his first game he pitched, he did great. And was like, were you nervous? And he said, I wasn't nervous because I'd already done it a million times in my head.
Absolutely.
So he had attended a seminar that I was doing visualization. And he said, it's funny, I tried teaching this to you in high school and you wanted no part of it. Of course, I was a teenager and he was my father, so there was nothing he could say. But that visualization, but then he was a professional athlete and he got hurt. And all of a sudden there was a loss of identity. Mm. And then it was the same thing with a lot of the people that I coach or I work with who sell businesses. You sell your business, you grow this big company, you get to a certain place, and then all of a sudden there's an identity loss. Because I'm no longer the athlete, the CEO, the leader. Even your email address is about identity. Right?
So very true.
So your website, you know, Cancer Climber, right?
Cancerclimber.org or SeanSwanner.com.
Right. So like it is your identity. So I get that. It's really common. So for people here, whether you got the degree, people who go through school and they get the job and then they're not happy, or this isn't just for people who survived cancer or did the Explorers Grand Slam. This is for, you became a dentist, you became a doctor, you became a lawyer, you got the job, you got the promotion, you got the family, you've got the house, you've got something, and then you realize you're not happy with what you have, but maybe you feel stuck because you put so much time into it. What did you do? Like, what happened when you got to that place and you got home from the Grand Slam and went to Denny's and really tied it all in? When you did that, and then where was the shift? What did you do? What did you realize? What was the big change that from this depression, this loss of identity? What happened?
You know, it's interesting because when I did come back and I slowly started working myself out of that depression, I started thinking about the cancer. You know, because it's so relatable and it's such a good metaphor. Because every night when I went to bed, I was terrified during my second cancer, 14 days to live. I was terrified to close my eyes at night because I didn't know if I was going to wake up the next day. Now imagine doing that for a year and a half, not knowing if you're going to wake up the next day. So I learned, first of all, to be comfortable in the uncomfortable. And then when the doctor said, hey, Sean, you're in remission, go live your life. My parents were happy. My family was happy. My brother, my mom, my dad, I mentioned them, my parents. Everybody I knew was freaking ecstatic. They were like, oh my God, Sean's in remission. That's fantastic. My first thought was, now what do I do? Because that was my identity for such a long time. Same thing reaching the North Pole, completing the Explorer's Grand Slam. Now what do I do? So I actually put together what I call the Big Hill Challenge. It's pretty cool, because I couldn't find anything that was going to help me online, I created it myself, and I created it initially for cancer patients, going from that transition from a patient to a survivor, back into real life. But then I realized it's great for military, going back into real life. It's great for anybody who's going through transition at any moment or any time in their lives. And it helps people utilize their own personal core values to get more from themselves and more from life. And for the longest time, coming back after the North Pole, I didn't have that. Like, okay, well, what am I gonna do with my life? So I created this to help myself, and I realized that it helped me so much, I wanted to give it to other people. And by going back to giving and helping others, that became my purpose. There's no end goal now. It's like the ultimate end goal, well, not goal, but the ultimate end destination for everybody is death. I don't see anybody rushing there. Right. So along your path and along my path, along the journey that I'm living now, I want to give as much as I can. I've never seen a U-Haul in a funeral procession. You know, I don't need stuff. I want to give and help other people and change the world.
So you got to this place where, much like with your cancer, when you survive, you wanted to give other people hope. When you hike, when you climb, you bring people with you and you bring people on the journey so they're excited about the moment and they follow you and they say, I can tell you, all the people that I shared it with all said, that is so cool. And they said, oh, thank you for doing that. I was like, I only gave the names. Like, he's the one who climbed. Like, this is a...
But they're the ones who are inspiring us both.
Right. And so there's a moment, that moment of being able to give back. So tell us more about this, about the challenge, because I actually reached out to you after we met and told you that I was struggling with my son who had gone to college, it didn't work, joined the Army, got hurt in boot camp and got sent home. So we got the joy and the lovely part of being there for all of boot camp, but not actually right. being deployed and being sent home, and was trying to find something. And then read your book, watched your movie. I can probably say now he's working at a Lake of the Woods at a luxury fishing resort
nice.
Up in northern, it's technically Canada, but somehow it's part of the United States. I don't know why. but it's some screw up from the Treaty of Paris, actually. But but he's up there doing something in nature and loving it. But it was this hope of I can do something different. So talk about this, because we talked about the challenge you gave him. Talk a little bit more about this for people in transition. What is the Big Hill Challenge?
Well, it's a 3-week online challenge. You don't have to hike any mountains. There's nothing physical involved at all. All the work is the work that you do inside. So a 3-week online, self-motivated, self-guided. You know, you'll get sick and tired of seeing this face on your computer screen or your phone, because there are tons of videos. But it takes 5 minutes to 15 minutes a day, and it literally changes your life. TheBigHillChallenge.com.
But the TheBigHillChallenge.com.
Yeah. Yeah, but the biggest concept is you are never going to find anything out here to satisfy what you need inside. So to quote Michael Jackson, was it, if you want to make a change, start with a man in the mirror or something like that. You know, literally, it's a deep, hard look into the mirror, like I did when I was battling my first cancer. I mentioned it earlier. I looked in the mirror. I didn't even recognize who was looking back at me. So many people are terrified to do that deep work because of the answers they're going to find. And because they might look inside themselves and realize that they're not really happy or proud of who they are. This can make that shift and that transition. Just based on a 1 degree difference 15 miles away, you know, you're a completely different person. But you're happier. You're enjoying life more. There's more joy. There's more life to who you are as a human being. And the only person who can do that is yourself.
Yeah, so when we come back after the break, we're going to talk more about next steps for all of you. So if you've worked really hard, if you've either overcome a lot of adversity, you're facing a lot of adversity, or you've done a lot only to get somewhere and realize this isn't it, it's not enough, then there's one more mountain to climb. And it's a good one. And so we have no one better to guide us than Sean Swarner. So we'll catch you after the break. Hey, Chris Jarvis, this week on Be the Giraffe, my guest, Sean Swarner, the author of Being Unstoppable. He has done the 7 summits and the North Pole and South Pole, and has run 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 different continents. This man is unstoppable. Oh, by the way, he's a 2-time cancer survivor and only has 1 lung. Despite that, he is going to breathe life into your goals, into your life. You do not want to miss it. This week on Be the Giraffe, Sean Swarner. Welcome back. My guest, Sean Swarner, who has done all 7 summits, the Explorers Grand Slam, North Pole, South Pole, 7 continents, 7 marathons, 7 continents, 7 days, and 2-time cancer survivor, doing it all with 1 lung. You have so much to say, so much to share, really super impactful. I appreciate the friendship we've developed and what we're going to do going forward. You took some notes. So you just got back from Kilimanjaro. We talked in the last segment about you actually messaging me from Kilimanjaro and then planning your trip out here to do the show, which we're all very grateful for. But you said that this is different. Because you've done this so many times, and the joy of having a guide is someone who doesn't just take you someplace, but anticipates things along the way. And so you, having achieved all these mountains and had them, conquered them all, and not actually seeing the result you thought you were going to have, you have a different view, a different word, a different whole
different
vision
everything.
For this. Different everything. So share that.
Different everything. So to kind of set the stage, the average success rate on Kilimanjaro is 48%.
48. So just under half of the people who start finish.
My groups are at 99% success.
That'd be better.
A little bit better, right? In fact, double better. One of the main differentiators is everybody on every other group, they're just plodding forward, their heads are down. Again, they're focused on the false summit, not the real summit. We're the only group on the mountain singing, dancing, having a great time, telling jokes, and the summit becomes a byproduct of having fun. We're enjoying the journey because it's no longer about the top. We always make it because we have a deeper purpose. And I don't call it an expedition. Most people say, oh, we're going on an expedition up Kilimanjaro. If it's you versus Mother Nature, and most people go there with the concept of, oh, I'm going to, you know, conquer the mountain. If it's you versus Mother Nature, you're not going to win that battle. She's going to take you down every single time. So it's you versus yourself on the mountain. And it's not an expedition, it's an inspedition. It's an inward journey through an outward adventure. And every group I take up, the trip's a little bit different. So I actually create questions for people to take, and these are the actual questions from this group. But each group is a little bit different. And we discussed, you know, the false summit versus true summits. And the first thing that we started talking about was letting go of the ego. And the first question that I had for them was, if no one else ever knew I reached this summit, would it still matter to me?
It's a great question.
If the answer is yes, I would still go, then you're doing it not because of the ego. You're doing it for a better purpose. Then we start talking about resilience. And then, am I chasing this goal for external validation or internal fulfillment? Again, going back to the ego.
And how important that is for young people, because young people now with Instagram, social media, TikTok, the views, the likes, the really quick snippets that life is consumed in 5, 10, and 30-second increments. Like, how important is that for that question? Like, ask that question again, like, to the camera about what the reason is for doing this.
You mean, am I chasing this goal for external validation or internal fulfillment?
Yes.
Yeah, you have to know. And if it is for external validation, a great way to look at this is so many people are more concerned about what others think of them than what they think of themselves. If I'm on social media, no offense to anybody who follows me on social media, why do I care if someone's putting me down on social media? If I don't even know that person, you know, I have a circle of friends. Those are the people who mean something to me. You know, and there was something else my wife and I were talking about where, let's say you're working a job. You get up and you're at work at 9 a.m. You have these goals that you actually go after because your boss is telling you to reach those goals, certain numbers, whatever. You're doing that for someone else. When you want to start working out, when you want to start working for yourself, when you want to be an entrepreneur, when you have other goals that you have, when are you going to start living your life instead of somebody else's?
One of my mentors, Doug Hostetler, he's a good friend, mentor, a lovely man in Maryland, and I was struggling with a lot of this for a long time. I was struggling with not fitting in the financial world, or I don't look at things the way other people do, and I'm looking for different depth, and I don't value the things other people value necessarily, and I was bemoaning that. And he said, only seek the praise of the praiseworthy.
Ooh, I love that. And that reminded me of I was training for Kilimanjaro. It was my 27th trip up, right? So just a few months ago. I was in Colorado going up and down, and a guy started criticizing my form. And I thought, first of all, he doesn't know who he's talking to because I've been up there that many times. And I realized, never take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice.
Say that to the camera.
Never take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice.
That's great. And it's the person who's the place you want to be, right? It's the person
yes.
who's at the top of the mountain shouting down, guiding you up is a lot different than the person who's at the bottom yelling at you to come down.
Exactly.
It's a very different thing.
But going back to the Kilimanjaro trip, another reason we're so successful is because I lead from behind. I encourage people to go and explore, empowering them to get more out of the trip, more out of the journey. Now, of course, I'm in the back making sure, okay, don't fall off and die. But at certain points, when it gets dangerous, I'm
out front. That's the 99%.
That's you exactly. Were. That's the 1% that didn't make it. I'm telling people, put your hand here, put your foot there. But then each morning we give them a certain, I give them a set of questions. You know, on day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six, we have certain questions that we run through. So one of the best ones that I gave them on day one is, you know, if you're going on any journey, what am I leaving behind on this journey? What no longer serves you? And then when things
get... Hold on with that one. So
yeah.
What are you leaving behind? When I was working with Jack Canfield, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul and Success Principles, one of the questions he challenged us with was, what do you do well? What is it you currently do well that is keeping you from doing something better?
I like that.
So what are you really good at? But because you're good at it, it's stopping you from growing, exploring, reaching fulfillment, doing something else. And that's because it's easy to give up things you don't like.
Yeah, of course.
But give up the thing that someone's willing to pay you for, someone that people applaud you for, something that people admire about you, to leave that behind is the ego. That's the, I can tell people the reason why, one of the reasons I do this show is I had a difficult transformation of, I used to work with very successful people. And I realized that working one-on-one, I could only work with so many people. But if I can have a show where I inspire or introduce people who are doing great things to a bigger audience. If I have a business, a tax-related business that helps companies save money so that people have the money to then pay other people to help them, that it's that if I can elevate 100 people to work with 100 people, I can touch 10,000 lives. I could never do that one-on-one. I don't have the time, but it was a difficult ego move to say, I can do greater good if I can give up the high five, the hug, the words of affirmation, the gifts, all the things. It was, I mean, this is very timely. This is something that's happened in the last 6 months for me.
Wow.
And so it's a powerful question. So, but keep going, because I think that these are the questions that I think the audience has to hear.
And on day two, and the questions are actually made for certain parts of the trip. You know, the terrain goes with the questions too. When things get difficult, do I lean into it with courage or shrink away, and why? That goes back to question one as well. You know, where in my life have I underestimated how far I've come already? That's a big one. And for me, we actually, and we go over these every evening. And for me, where I have already come, where have I underestimated? I think it was, and this is gonna sound really weird, my accomplishments. And the guy looks at me, he goes, you know, you might have to beep this out. He goes, bullshit. He's like, I'm calling you out. I was like, why would you do that? He's like, well, because look at all the accomplishments that you've had in your life. I was like, yeah, but those are the things that I haven't given enough attention. Those are the things I don't really, I've underestimated how far I've come.
So I think those three questions for the audience, three really important things. One was the, are you doing this for yourself or for other people? So really important to understand who you're doing it for and that you're not giving somebody else the power, right? That's a big
Huge.
Part of it. There's the, what happens when I face adversity? Do I lean into it or do I fall back? So some of this is the fear. Am I doing something to succeed or am I afraid of failing, which is really important. And then the last question accomplishments was, yep.
Where in my life have I underestimated how far I've already come?
So the third one, after we get into, am I doing it for myself or others?
Yep.
Do I lean into things or am I looking for success or am I afraid of failure? And then the third piece is actually looking at all the things you've done. And it's a great exercise to go through all of your accomplishments and go through, again, same thing where we're going through the transformational stuff. It was go back to your life and do everything. I won a spelling bee. I got a merit badge.
Everything
you did, there's some power to going over the positives and not thinking, well, I didn't climb. I was just looking at the picture I did of climbing Half Dome with my father, which there's part of it, which was, that was a great trip. It was awesome. And then I'm like, and Sean's done Kilimanjaro 27 times. And so you have that moment of this is silly. But then it's like, yeah, but that was at the time. That was a big deal, and it was a long hike, and we hadn't done a 14-hour round trip.
And that's you, not me.
And it was right, in a different stage of life, and different time, and everything else. And so it's not comparing yourself to others, but just pushing yourself to do other things. So, with that, in the last couple seconds, anything you want to tell the people, the audience, about things to do, places to find you, stuff to try, a quick challenge for the audience?
Wow, SeanSwarner.com.
Just like
Sean Connery, and then like the proper way. And then Swarner, just like the Warner Brothers with an S.com, pretty simple. A challenge. You know, you were talking about, or we were talking about how other people are potentially comparing themselves to someone else, and they get caught up in that. And then they start looking at the things that they don't have in their lives, and they start getting down on themselves. The challenge would be just for 2 weeks. If you want to do it for three, great. Grab a frickin' journal, right? And every time you're getting ready for bed, right before you go to bed, write down five things you're grateful for that happened that day. Not your house, your health, your wealth, stuff like that. That's a given. Five specific things that happened that day. And then pick one of them, say, I'm most grateful for blank because blank. And now you're going to go to bed with an attitude of gratitude. And over time, there's scientific proof that it changes the synaptic connections through neuroplasticity in your brain. So just try that for 2 weeks.
I love that. So, Sean Swarner, I am grateful for you, your friendship, your motivation, your accomplishments, and most importantly, your heart. Everyone, elevate your perspective, see a better path, and follow Sean Swarner so you can be the giraffe.